This is a production of Cornell University.
Hey, let's start the meeting. And I'll start with roll call of the voting members as usual. Arts and Humanities, Kristen. Andy?
Here.
Becca? I think she's not here today. Life Sciences, Alexa? Here. Katia? Cinnamon? Visual Sciences and Engineering, Dash?
Here.
Deepfake?
Here.
Jaren?
Here.
Nation?
Here.
Professional Schools, Alexei? Sarah? Elizabeth?
Here.
Anna? James?
Here.
Nick? Social Sciences, Margaret? Lo is not here today. Wendy?
Here.
Tara from CIPA?
Here.
Caitlin?
Here.
Shen?
Here.
And we have a new Masters of ILR voting members, David?
Here.
Thank you. So with that, we're in forum. And I would like us to approve the minutes of our last meeting from October the 29th, 2018. Any amendments? Okay, any objections? Seeing none, the minutes have passed. And now we have our presentation prepared. First, we'll start with Beth, who is our GPSAFC chair. So she'll be doing some presentations. And then we also have people from the reimbursement side, Terry and Jonathan. Thank you for being here with us today. They'll also be here to answer your questions.
So thank you guys so much for coming. We're going to keep this pretty informal, just going over basics about the FC, and then, like Marina said, John and Terry are here to answer any questions about the reimbursement side, because that isn't something that the FC directly deals with. But if you guys have like questions at any point throughout the presentation, like feel free to step in. So pretty much just basics, all of your budget requests are going to be submitted via OrgSync. So most of you are like familiar with how to use that. If you have questions about actually like physically going through and submitting the budget, I do have like a presentation myself on my computer that I can forward to anyone who's interested. But mainly just knowing that all signatures of your president, treasurer, and advisor are going to be necessary here by the date that is listed for the due date. So if you submit your budget, the budget's due on the 30th of the month, you'll have all those signatures done by the 30th. Particularly if your event is for over, if you're asking for money over $300 for an event, making sure that you include as many relevant details that you're aware of as possible to increase your chances of getting funding. So having like your date, your number of attendees, breaking down your costs for like food or whatever it is per person, those are just all really helpful for us and will make it easier for us to give you money when we're reviewing budgets. And if you are trying, like our guidelines state that we don't approve off-campus events, but in the event that you have a very special extenuating circumstance and you do want to try to get an off-campus event funded, knowing that you have to submit your statement explaining that rationale and explaining why you need that also at the time of your budget submission. So we're just going to go through a few like quick examples of budgets that are like very adequate so that people can kind of see exactly what we mean when we say going through details. So here you have like food for this reception, gives info on the speaker who's coming, and gives attendance. Same thing here pretty much, just giving the numbers we expect, 30 students for this much food, breaking that down. Travel costs, making sure that you're giving like the name and credentials of the speaker, not just asking for like money for a plane ticket for a speaker. It's just a little bit vague and we're not probably going to be able to fund that, again, particularly because for travel costs, it's probably going to be more than 300. attaching any like statements that you have from if you've had the event in the past, explaining it, or attaching any like quotes that you have or receipts is very helpful. And then, like I said, having all your signatures. Any questions as of right now?
Hi, Beth, can you give a little bit of context, please? So is this, I understand it's going to change from annual budget to month-to-month or something like that, or it could be wrong. And is this just for like an annual budget, or is this just for specific events that are outside of the annual budget?
So pretty much just depends on like how your group wants to submit. Some groups like in September submit their entire budget for the year. So they have each event broken down. They say like they just have everything planned out, which is what we recommend, because then like we have, if at the beginning of the year we'll have all the funding, like our max amount of funding that we can give out. So if your organization like plans that, you're gonna probably be able to get more money as opposed to if you submit things on a monthly basis. But a lot of groups do that as well. They, you know, have it planned super far in advance. If they, like at the end of November, know they're going to have an event in January and they want to just request the money then, they can do that. But as far as like the term annual in our guideline, which I'll talk about in a bit, is kind of like misleading, because you don't have to submit the budget once. You don't. You can submit 5 budgets throughout the year that cover whatever tier cap you have.
Did that answer your question?
It did.
Okay. Did you have clarification for this?
Yeah,
or?
So to speak, all this information applies to both types of submissions. So your advanced.
Yeah. For sure. All right. So examples, again, kind of going back, just budgets that are a bit too vague here. It just says food gift. That doesn't really give us any information to go off of. Dinner for event. You guys get the gist. So we will have like Terry speak to the reimbursement process, but pretty much there are methods that you guys can take so that you're not paying out of pocket. We have direct payment forms that can be used, and then we have like you can rent out kind of Wegmans cards as well if you're doing catering through there. And just really making sure that you keep and save all of your original receipts and are submitting those on time. It has to be within 30 days of the event. So if you come 5 months later and say, oh, I want reimbursement for something that happened, you know, ages ago, that's not going to fly. Anything you guys want to speak to that now? Or?
We'll wait till you're done.
So pretty much the guidelines, we are trying to revise this year for sure, just because there's some definitely like vague points in there, and the schedule that we have in there is from a couple of, from when they were last revised in 2017. So when you are like looking for the current schedule on OrgSync, there's a list of important like dates and deadlines, I think it's called, that everyone should have access to if you're in the Graduate Professional Student Org portal. So looking on that for your schedule, most everything's due like the last Friday of each month to get funding for the following month and beyond. So really in 2017, the big thing was our tier system was established, which I'm sure everyone's familiar with. Tiers 1 through 4, 1 being the smallest, 4 being the highest. The special project request sort of term was altered, so you can no longer get additional funding with a special project request. Like if you are a tier one organization and you have a max of $500 to spend, you can't request a special project to get more money than that. But you can get additional money from your, other than your tier cap, from field or GPCI funding. So field funding, if you are the field organization for your department, you can get, I believe it's up to $200 plus $1 for each person in your field. And then for GPCI events, really the key thing with those is they have to be established events that really directly align with one of the GPCI initiatives that is in like the current GPCI document. And for those per event, it's a $200 limit, I believe. And if you are requesting funds for GPCI, just making sure that when you are like describing your event, you are very explicitly tying it to whatever objective in the GPCI document that you are trying to accomplish with your event. And as far as the guidelines go, we are definitely like, I'm definitely very interested to hear what people have to say for suggestions, because like I'm working to revise those, and I'm sure like the next chair who takes over will also be interested in that. So with that, just like any suggestions, feedback, questions, whether it's like a logistic thing or
So you're okay.
Yeah.
So I had Matt, Eddie, Dietrich, and Caitlin. Did I miss anyone?
Yeah. Okay.
So first off, thank you very much. I know that the guidance review means going to be revised by appropriations and later the assembly. I know earlier this year, the assembly approved a bylaw change to allow you to create more commissioners. Is there anything else that you think you need the assembly to do to help you in your important role as you continue to forward?
I feel like really just like soliciting the feedback on the guidelines is the biggest thing, because I know most people like who are in the assembly are also on in like different organizations that actually go through this process, so getting feedback there I think would be the biggest thing right now.
Okay.
I also would like to mention that the term for the FC chair runs January in January, so therefore we will be electing a new one soon, and we could really use a new chair.
Yes.
I have
any minutes. Sure. I have one more question following up the JPCI and the grant funding. Is it, you mentioned that it's $200 plus $1 per person.
Per people, yeah.
Is that the cap, or can we keep requesting JPCI funding every single time $200?
So the question is, are you eligible to only ask for GPCI funding for up to $200 once a year, or can you do it for multiple events and you get $200 for each?
I believe it's like a one-time.
Same thing for Bill?
Yeah. Yes.
And then just a clarification, the GPCI FC does not do retroactive funding. So if I only have that as a
yes,
I cannot request money.
Right, that's correct. So that's like actually a very key point. So if you right now were like, I hosted an event in October, I want to get funding for it, that is out the door. You can't get like reimbursement for that. The only like small exception with that or to that rule would be if like we meet, our budgets are due the 30th and we meet a week later and your event is on like November 3rd or something. Like you would have to, you know what I'm saying? Like you would get retroactively funded, but you would have already submitted your request for it, so it wouldn't.
So I just wanted to follow up on the GTSAFC guidelines that you were revised in 2017. Are those posted on the GTSAFC website?
Dietrich, did you have any Caitlin?
Can you clarify how the school year fits into this? So, if we have a budget that's approved for this current school year, or let's make it easier, so next school year, if we get our budget approved in May for the following school year, what are the restrictions around that? And I'll give you the context that GP Women hosted some orientation events this year, and we had some issues because we were told that the budget officially didn't start until the first day of classes, so the orientation events we couldn't get reimbursed.
Yeah. So we do have summer funding, so like that's probably what I like would suggest having like looked into, I guess, retroactively. But this year we kind of actually did it a little bit differently. We didn't approve annual budgets like in the spring before. We waited to do it in the fall because we've had like a lot of issues with e-board shifting over the summer, and so people in May or April submit this budget, and then the new people come in September and are like, well, wait, we don't want to do any of these events, and now we're stuck with all this funding that's like bound to these events. So that's something like very, very much so with the new guidelines we are trying to like find the optimal timeline for that sort of thing. But I guess like I would say for that sort of situation when you're like on sort of the cusp of like in the summer, I would say like encourage them to apply for summer funding. But hopefully like by next year that will be figured out in like a better okay. way.
Yeah, I think it's just that because orientation, the event was like the day before classes start.
Yeah.
But we were just kind of, and it was like a small event, we wouldn't be the two of us, but it was just confusing. I'll put it
here.
I have one other question. Have you or anybody talked yet about soliciting feedback from outside of this room on the guidelines? It may be something that's useful for like sending an email out to all funded organizations.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I've hosted, like, last year a bunch of, like, town halls and office hours and things like that, which, like, frankly aren't very widely attended, so it is, like, difficult to solicit feedback, but, like, those measures are being taken.
Okay.
Nate.
I have two questions. One is that I think one of the goals with revising the guidelines was there was a really high workload on the SE commissioners themselves,
yeah.
constantly every month, and that was hoping to reduce some of the stress and the intensity of that work. Has that borne out? Is the first question. Or is it still, have the new guidelines reduced the stress level and the amount of work that the commissioners
have? I'd say no.
So that means there's like maybe there's a little bit of a failure.
Yeah.
Second question is, what are the biggest contributors to the work and the stress level for the commissioners on the committee? And is it something, and how much of the stuff that you control, and how much of it is stuff that is outside?
Yeah. I think, like, something interesting that we've talked about as far as, like, internally within the FC is the idea of maybe, like, kind of going back to Matt's question, this would be something that, like, it's more of like an internal organizational like structure change, but I think something that's difficult is that like when we go through and we look at budgets, it's not like, okay, so like Andy's on the FC, right? It's not like he every month looks at a certain like group of organizations. Like every month it changes, like who submits budgets, and so you don't really like establish a like relationship with the people whose budgets you're looking at, so it can sometimes like communicating with them if there's an issue can be difficult. So like something that we're thinking about doing is saying, okay, this commissioner is assigned to these organizations for the year. Like if they're staying on the FC for the year, they will handle these organizations and like they'll handle all the communication with them. I think it's like difficult too because all emails, even if I don't look at someone's budget, like obviously I review budgets as well, but even if I don't review them, all the emails about them come to me. So it's like difficult to distribute that work,
and,
I guess.
And so like the content of like those emails, is it all stuff of like, hey, you know, when are you going to approve this? Or is it like, can you help me with this part of the process? Like, you mentioned before, you know, there's some things like you don't deal with the reimbursements, but
yeah.
I've been at SU for a couple of years, way back. And then there was a lot of like, can you help me get reimbursed?
Yeah, definitely. It's really a mixed bag, to be honest. It's everything I feel like you can imagine, really. So
of the volume of like, the emails you have to read, the stuff you have to distribute, how much is like stuff that you can control? How much is stuff that's like, this is not really in my domain to control, but I'm still trying to respond?
Yeah, a lot of it is definitely about, like, concerning reimbursements, which I, like, forward a lot of those to Terry. And then otherwise, I think just often people are, like, confused about timelines, so yeah, they're wondering, like, when am I going to get reimbursed for this, or when am I going to get approved for this, like, what is that looking like I have this event coming up quickly, I want to make sure I'm going to be reimbursed for it, so... It's kind of a mix. I don't know.
Not really sure how much. Okay.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Copy that.
Okay. So two questions. One, what is the FC? How does the FC deal with code conferences if a couple of us want to get together and talk about something? And the second question was, I know you might forget that this might change. But for all the things that you will not fund or have like an asterisk next to like alcohol or shipping or things like that.
Sure. So as far as things that like what do you want to know about things that we won't fund? Like
just like
what
broadly, is there anything you're like, we will not fund this? Like
yeah.
Yeah, something like things you give away or like gifts you will not fund. month?
Yeah, yeah. In our guidelines, we have a list of probably like 10 to 20 items that we do not fund. So certain, like, they're like very specific, like I think like postage is one, or like web browse, like web hosting sites, like domains, things like, to be honest, I don't know why, like I obviously was not like on the FC when these guidelines in 2017 were made, so I don't really understand a lot of like the nuances as far as why there are certain things. Maybe like John or Terry could speak to that if there's anything like
model deposits, you know,
deposits
that we're spending a lot of time not reimbursing for when they're really minor in the scheme of things.
Yeah.
So something to
So I think like that's something I personally would be very interested to hear if anyone has similar feedback on that, because I even personally, like, I just don't know why a lot of those items were included. I mean, some of them it does make sense, but hopefully that list will be like clarified when we revise the guidelines. And what was your first question again?
How do we work with partners?
Pretty much, so both organizations will submit the budgets and like will mention that it's for co-sponsorship. Like often one club will do the food, one will do whatever else there, like a honorarium or whatever it is. So just making sure that like in the budget it's very clear, like that you are co-sponsoring with this organization and like the event is happening on this date, so that we can like be very like understand like the time constraints of that, because often like co-sponsored events obviously require a lot more planning and have like a lot of moving parts to them. So really just like communicating that in your budget. And we don't tend to have like too many issues with groups co-sponsoring. Like we get like a fair amount of those requests. So
I have Eugene and then Alex.
Hi, thanks for the presentation. For context, Biz and Zach have been getting feedback pretty regularly that student organizations don't understand the Finance Commission's process and guidelines and stuff. And I know that there were town halls and things last semester, but I think that possibly the communication of that to organization leadership may have not been, or people ignore it, I don't know, may not have been efficient or something like that. But one idea that some people have brought up is having some sort of training and making it, not mandatory, then very highly recommended of the fiscal officers of these organizations, so that it would clear up a lot of these issues, like, right off the bat.
Yeah, I know, like, even I attended, I think it was earlier this year, maybe it was beginning of last spring, like, the law school did a training, I think, like, the vet school does a training, like, a lot of those professional schools do trainings that the officers do have to attend, and we literally go through how to submit a budget, go through the guidelines, all that. Like, I could certainly email everyone in, like, the broader graduate school and be like, oh, I'll do this, like, if you think that would be helpful,
yeah.
Like, I'd be open to doing it.
It's just something that we've consistently heard, like, over the years, that people, people do come into these organizations, you expect some amount of, like, transition, explaining it, but some organizations are new and, like, have never interacted with anything before, and I think it's been really helpful, both for you and your group, that you get better budgets and have fewer people complaining about stuff, and for the people that are trying to access the funds.
Sounds good. Thank
you.
Just to add on to what we have said about better advertising, because I had no idea that you did town halls last semester. I've been a treasurer and I'm doing the same. So
I think Beth normally uses the org thing too.
It's not
But that's the only platform where she can actually email
everyone.
This is too hard.
Is this adding to the point? Okay.
It's really quick. So this presentation is part of that, trying to get the word out. And I know that Beth emailed all the organizations who have rejected money through OrgSync. But I think hopefully that this will answer a couple of questions. which it can't be too extensive, but this is the beginning of that conversation.
Alex.
Hi. I don't know what the house rules or any of that is, so I'm just going to speak. I don't have a badge. My name is Alexandria, and I'm the treasurer for the Black Writing Professional Student Association and treasurer for Women in Public Policy. So my experience has been in two different spaces as a treasurer. So I don't know how many people in here are treasurers of organization. So I have a few questions and a few comments. My first question is, well, and my questions are geared more towards understanding how my experience and hopefully the experience of other treasurers in the room can contribute to a more functional system in the future. Because my overall experience has been the learning curve of learning how to utilize these systems and be a treasurer is more at the peer-to-peer level with other treasurers. And I think that when I actually referenced the official GPSAFC guidelines, I think that it's very thorough and very clear, but I think that it's so dense that that may be difficult for people to absorb. And I think that, I don't know how long we're going to be enforcing, but I think that if there was maybe like a video that documented that was like, hi, I'm the FC committee chair. My name is this. My email is this. I'm going to walk you through in a 5-minute video everything you need to know about being a treasurer. Like, just to kind of reaffirm, and it takes weight off of you guys to constantly have to re-answer a lot of the same questions in emails, because it's just a lot of, like, I think there's some miscommunication from both sides, as us as treasurers of organizations, and some from GPSA and also from administration. There could be more communicating in like a more clear and defined way. So I don't want us to like dominate this meeting, but I'm hoping there's an opportunity where you're like explicitly asking other treasurers in the room what suggestions that we may have. I know I have a few. I think that what may be effective is if we can submit our suggestions maybe through a Google form or some format like that, so that it's not overwhelming in terms of information. But thank you for all that you all have done. You've been very helpful in like answering emails, constantly answering like same questions, and the work that you guys do, which is to make GPSA and thus our organization, the things that we care about, stronger organizations.
Thank you. Yeah.
Can I add to that?
Yes.
So ORCSAC, a few years ago, we decided we needed a new system because the system that was being used for both SAFC and GPSAFC was an in-house system and it wasn't sustainable to keep programming it. So we chose ORCSAC, and that most of our requirements compared to other companies. As soon as we basically started using it. In fact, one week before we started using it, one of the SAFC admin people said to us, well, what about the 3 approvals? And they hadn't said anything about that. So that's where you get the 3 approvals that have to be added. We know that's not efficient. We'd like an email to go out, make a budget attached, somebody electronically approve it. So we started compiling a list for ORCSAC of things that we would like to do better. And that was, what, 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago? We met with them like 4 or 5 times. They wrote it all down. Then they told us to the company, and then they were putting all enhancements on hold for about a year and a half. So that's where we are right now. We're waiting to see what their next product is. We're hoping that their new product will be more efficient and things can be done a lot more electronically. So everybody that has used ORCSAC knows there are some things that aren't so great about it. We're hoping that, a year from now, next fall, we'll have a better system. So that's the answer to that. And as far as having the training, the person that was in the role before Carrie was the one who was approving the reinstatement and stuff, she did have training, I know, for at least the past 2 or 3 years. And for whatever reason, they weren't very long time. But the 5-minute video that you suggested, I think that's a great idea. We thought about that. We were kind of waiting until we see what the next product is to do that. because we have step by step. This is how you do a budget. You can, you know, it's not a video, but it's a PowerPoint. And until we have a new system, we don't want to really spend a lot of time coming up with something as a video. But we have thought about it. Thank you for the suggestion.
Shane?
Yeah, question. So, can I clarify if reimbursements are only for organizations or for individuals, graduate students also, to make money, if they want to go and participate in other events or not?
So, the question is can individual graduate student request funding? Currently, yeah. There's no such arrangement, yeah.
Was that a question?
Yeah, well,
The GPSAFC is only for organizations. Caitlin?
I just wanted to suggest that because I know there's a lot of visitors in the room who aren't going to come to these meetings, that it is open for anybody to ask questions or make comments. You don't need to be a voting member or have a name tag.
Raise your hand and I'll acknowledge you, and then you can. You know, say your comment or question. Yes.
There is a, so you said that all speakers are necessary for the presentation advisor, but there was a comment made by our treasurer that the current reimbursement only asked for two of these sort of things. Is this a change?
Reimbursements are different than budgets.
Yes.
Right. Yes. So in terms of on board sync, getting your budget approved by the FC to say, yes, you will have that money to spend on those things, that's one thing. That's what I'm talking about. The reimbursement form is whatever it says on there.
Two signatures.
Yes. Any other questions? Okay.
I'm just going to add two data points. I was a SU organization president in a group that was funded by SU a couple of years ago. I mean, Tasia, kind of, were regular training. I know they're sent out via the portal, so I presume that I tend to automate the emails. I know those continued. Those are very helpful, I think. Thank you for doing those. I guess the other data point I had was in terms of some of the restrictions for items that can or cannot be funded by the FC. My understanding was some of them were also due to IRS regulations.
Yeah.
Around you can't give money, you just quite 501c3 giving money to another group that's primarily trying to raise money for a charity. So
right.
Some of them were, like, believe are due to IRS restrictions, but I didn't see that the rules are otherwise. Just kind of, some of them are arbitrary, but some of them are
legally, yes.
Yeah.
I saw more hands here. Yes. Yes, you and then the person at the back. Yes, okay.
Anna from Fisher, from GP Women. What is the status of the IELTS teacher reimbursement process? Sorry, I guess I missed it. I don't know if you talked about it.
We were going to talk about that, yes. So, what's the update now?
She's going to give an update on that. Can you hold on to your questions on that? Okay, thank you. Did you have a question for allocation? Yes. Okay.
I'm Trey from the Graduate Student Dance Society. I have two questions.
Yeah.
One, it seems like you may have talked about this earlier, but if you make a budget request for an event that ends up not happening, can you reallocate those funds? You made it seem like you can't earlier.
Yeah, we really, if you plan for an event and you, I mean, it depends on the circumstances. Like, if something really, like, strange happens, like your speaker isn't able to come because there's, like, a snowstorm or something, then you can get funding for another speaker event later in the year. You would just, like, email either you'd probably email me, and you would, like, work that out. But you can't, like, get funding for an event and then just decide not to have it and then expect to get the funding back. Because, like, we've already allocated our portion. Like, we've already allocated that in our budget. So, with the exception of, like, extenuating circumstances, no.
Okay, and then my second question is what the status of the tier request is.
Yes.
We lost our funding tier because that happened to us last year. We scheduled, made a budget request for an event that ended up falling through. Then we couldn't use our budget, so then we lost the entirety of our budget this year. And we made an appeal.
Yeah.
And instead that has been processed, but nothing has been updated.
Oh, yeah. No, the spreadsheet on OrgSync just hasn't been updated, but, like, you're, yeah, if you were given the appeal, then you are good.
Is that okay? Yeah. I had the person at the back, and then I'll have you. Yes.
Yeah, so I think it was Ethan Erickson from the Cornell and Johnson Law for Business. It was mentioned that there's going to be a review of like those 10 to 20 kind of items that can be reimbursed. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
What is that going to occur, and what's that form going to look like for that?
I mean, I'm thinking, like, as of right now, it would be kind of like what was suggested, like sending out a form to probably get, like, feedback from people as we're revising the guidelines, which hopefully is going to be happening, like, end of this semester into next semester. So, yeah, if you have any, like, feedback on that, feel free to, like, email me directly or, you know, I'm sure we'll, like, be sending out
forms. Specifically at Johnson, like, almost all our forms will print over at the end of this calendar year, so there might be some information gap within that. And so they can go ahead.
Yes, sorry.
Okay. I just had a quick question also related to the allocations and what if they're not used for school, is it for field funding as well? Like, our organization is concerned about the existence of the allocations. So I was just curious if the you have to say exactly what the field funding is for and suggest for that as well.
Yes. Yeah.
And then one more question. So for events that are off-campus, clearly off-campus, like a farm tour or something for our if they're approved, if the budget is approved, but they're still off-campus, there's no way that the budget would be denied, right? Because I know that GPS AFC money is not supposed to be
right.
But if the event...
Right. If you had submitted a request and you made it clear that it was happening off campus and you had, if we didn't contact you saying that we needed additional information, meaning that when you submitted the budget, you probably submitted your statement of, and like gave the budget breakdown and did everything like explaining why it was an extremely extenuating circumstance. If that gets approved, then you're good.
Okay. So the budget's approved.
Wendy.
Yeah, so if we like use the GPSA money for some events, or like if something happens, like a food, like people got sick from food, is there any responsibility that we have towards GPSA?
You mean like if you got something catered and people got
food? Yeah, and like someone got hurt from the event.
That's intriguing. We have club insurance.
Yes, club insurance.
Yeah. So like, I think
that's about the club insurance.
Yeah, club insurance. Yeah. It's in your student activity fee, $5 of it. $5, right? $550 goes to club insurance. So all your clubs are insured. Yes. Was that okay? Yeah. Did I say yes?
Yeah.
And I'll have you next. Yeah.
If you have a budget that's been partially approved, the general portion has, but the field hasn't, can you go ahead and do the events that were under the approved portion and get the numbers?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Yes.
So we have some information from the Center of Society and Practicing Organization. We apply for a few events and then only get a partial approval because we didn't provide how many number of students we have in our field.
Right.
We approve that. Well, the process of approving how many students we have.
So if you, like, I would say, like, talk to your DGS and you find out like exactly how many students are in your field, and then you would record that. Like, that's.
You have to leave a comment?
Yes, yeah. You leave a clarifying comment that explains how many people, and like just say you know, spoke to your DGS, and that's the number. Like, I'll believe you. Yeah, within reason.
Okay, Caitlin.
I've heard from people from a couple of organizations that are interested in moving up this year. Could you talk a little bit about what that process is?
Sure. So, again, kind of similar to the funding overall, that will either be like in our revised guidelines that'll be more clear in that schedule, whether that's something that will happen in like April, May, or in the fall. So this year we did all of that in the fall, and then had like an appeal process open for anybody who like wasn't happy with their tier, pretty much. And again, that was like sent out to everyone via OrgSync, all presidents and treasurers and admins. So it says like in our guidelines what you have to do in order, like there's a very clear section that goes over everything that you have to do in order to be considered for an upgrade. It's like you have to have used at least 90% of your funds. If you're a tier one organization, if you're another tier, you have to have used like 90% or 80% and have like a certain change in membership. So it's in there and you will get information about when that happens. But it wouldn't be happening for the next academic year until at least later this spring.
I actually have a question about the three-tier placements. So the club that I have is about PhD students. So PhD students, we don't get a lot of students coming into our department every year.
Yeah.
So in order to move up and then having to have that club numbers increase is like virtually impossible.
Yeah.
The price that required. Yeah. So how would you move up three-tier placement?
I mean, like, yeah. So, okay, so just to clarify, so the question is, like, you are in a certain department, all PhD students, and you only have, like...
We only take 4 years.
4 years, okay. So you're asking, like, how you would get that, meet that, like, percentage increase.
Right.
But I... Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you only need to meet that if you're moving to tier 4. And moving to tier 2 or 3... Do you need to have, like, a...
Yeah, we have it in our... I think for Tier 1 is the one that you can only... You only have to meet, like, the 90% requirement, but the others, in order to move, you do have to have, like, a percentage increase as well. So that's something, like, to be honest, I haven't... Like, that isn't, like, accounted for in our current guidelines, so that's something that I will definitely make note of, like, sort of how you would... go about like getting around that, because like we do understand and like want to support all, you know, organizations that aren't taking in huge numbers of students, so I think that's something that we can definitely like write in so that hopefully that can be accounted for in the future. Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, so we have, Terry, you wanted to talk about reimbursements, right?
Yes.
Yes. So, do we have any more questions about, tier placement and allocations? Because if not, we'll move on to Terry and then we'll go through reimbursement processes. Sorry, I'm trying to see. Okay.
Who discusses tactics and exemptions?
Reimbursements, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to make this primarily a question and answer, but I'll introduce myself. I'm Terry Boslett. I've probably talked with a few of you or maybe answered an email, but I work in student and campus life in finance and administration. And I started working with the GPSAFC this past summer through that funding cycle. My goal in working with this organization is to understand it and to try to think about some process improvements. We were hearing complaints last spring around the length of time it takes to get a reimbursement, as an example. And so I brought John into it, and we started looking at processes and thinking differently about how we might do some things. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Jonathan Hart from the Student Campus Life Business Service Center. My team and then some other teams within the center help out when we need it. We process most of the reimbursements and direct payments for all of the GPSAFC budgets.
So the one question I heard earlier was, what about this pilot program we were talking about? So when John and I started thinking about what could we do differently to make this reimbursement process easier and to maybe eliminate the need for you to pay out of pocket for things and then get reimbursed, we worked with some university colleagues to look at implementing a credit card, like a preloaded credit card. So you get awarded your $500 budget, and then we would load a declining balance credit card with that $500, your treasurer would then have access to this card and could make some purchases. John worked a lot on like what that process would look like and, you know, some of the responsibilities of that treasurer using that card and how we would work with it. So we've recently had, I mean, the process, the whole pilot has been delayed as university leadership has come back to us with a lot of questions. And so we've prepared a bunch of information about why we, you know, answered their questions and why we think this should go forward, and they're reviewing it right now. So hopefully, you know, more to come on that in the future. Anything else?
Yeah, our hope is to still implement the pilot this semester with a handful of groups and allow them to use it and prove that it's a good idea. One of the big concerns is the responsibility of somebody in a club having access to a card and maybe not using it for club purposes, and I don't think that's a problem. I think just the peer pressure itself would cause the, you know, the treasurers to, or whoever had it to use it the right way. So I don't think that would be an issue at all.
And am I correct to assume that in that hypothetical case, if there was a situation where someone was misusing the P card, then they themselves would have to be personally responsible for those funds?
Right, there would be disciplinary, yeah.
Or something like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we had a set of, like an agreement letter that the user would have to sign, and it did have individual responsibility, and I think it had some penalties, like for the organization, if somebody were to use it incorrectly.
Would you only be able to use the card after a budget request has been approved?
Yes.
Yeah, like Terry said, if you were approved to have an event and you were approved for $500 and you needed to buy things, you'd have the card with $500 balance on it, and that would be for that budget.
So you get the card per budget request, and it's not a card that all of the budget
No, yes. Yes, so it would be per request, but the same card could be, funds could be added to it. So if you're a group that does a monthly budget kind of thing, you know, we could add to it.
Yeah.
It does put some responsibility on the treasurer, though. So, you know, receipts would have to be uploaded into a system, and those kinds of things would, you know, so there is some, yeah, you still have some paperwork, shall we say, that goes along with that.
It's basically, what it's called is actually a declining balance procurement card. So it would follow a lot of the same rules that some of you might be familiar with in the departments with people that have procurement cards. Like services, for example, wouldn't be able to be purchased with. They have to be purchased in a different way. But for supplies and food and things like that, it could be used.
I have one quick question. So as far as reimbursement goes, after the money has been allocated from the GPSAFC, a lot of the organizations, mine included, got lowered a tier because there was middleman work that didn't do the job. So my question is once the money is allocated, the money is there, and it is up to us to request that money. You won't do anything. You just allocate the money. So as far as reimbursement, the middleman would have to go and request that money.
You mean the treasurer?
The treasurer. The treasurer.
Right. When your budgets are allocated, you're giving a certain amount of money to spend, whatever it's been allocated. If you spend all that money out of your pocket and never turn it in the correct form, you're not going to get reimbursed, and your club is not going to be credited for using that money.
And this new system would eliminate that process because the money would be allocated and you can spend it and then submit the receipt.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the treasurer would, you know, fill out an agreement and, I mean, there's a little bit of work in getting that card, but we believe it, in the long run, you'll not be spending out of pocket. That's what we're trying to avoid. And so on that note, we have several ways, things available for you to support your spending without you having to spend out of your pocket.
Before we do that, can I just clarify something? I want to make sure it's clear what the answer was. So if you had a budget for $500 for an event and your treasurer received a declining balance P card with $500 on it, if the treasurer only spent $200, it's going to affect your tier. You're only going to spend $200 out of the $500. Just because you got a card with $500 on it doesn't mean that money was used against your budget. And at the end of the year, just like all other unspent money, that would be reverted back to the activity account.
Thank you. Sorry.
That's okay. So let's talk about some ways, some other, you know, other ways to spend money other than out of your pocket. So we'll go back and forth here. There's, we do, we have a, an opportunity to do petty cash reimbursements. So if you do spend out of pocket, and currently if it's less than $50, I try to turn those things right around so that that money is then available. And we have that, the petty cash, sitting with another Terry, Terry Echter, who has an office in 401 Willard Strait Hall. So we're hoping to maybe increase that to $75. So if you do spend out of pocket, currently it's $50. We're hoping it will be increased. But we do try to turn that around really quick so that you can get petty cash, you know, get that cash back in your pocket.
Yeah, currently, and this kind of gives you an idea of how the risk that the university looks at. Currently, the petty cash limit is $25 per item throughout the university. 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, when we took this over, we got approval from the controller to raise it up to $50 for our purposes. And this year, I asked another person, I said, hey, can we get permission to go up to $75? And he looked at me and he said, why? Is the limit only, you know, what's the limit for the university? I said, it's only $25. He said, well, that seems silly. So he's actually working on raising the limit at the whole university to $75. So that could help a lot. There was quite a few transactions in the last few years that were between the $50 and $75.
We have Wegmans cards that you can borrow. And those Wegmans cards are, again, with Terry Echter. She's in Willard Strait Hall. If you walk in off of Hope Plaza, you go to the right. She has an office there. You can sign out a Wegmans card. Take it, go charge whatever it is that you want at Wegmans, bring it back with your receipts, and we'll take care of that piece of it.
So one of the things that with the Wegmans card or with any other purchasing method, how many groups know if they're independent or university? Raise your hand if you know what you are. So that leads to a lot of confusion. The independent groups, they're not allowed to technically use university purchasing methods like purchase orders and such, but with the Wegmans card, you can use a Wegmans card, whether you're university or independent. So we can talk about that a little more, but I wanted to throw that in there. That can be used by either type of organization.
Did you have a question?
Yeah, is there any consideration for like a Walmart card, the equivalent of a Wegmans card? So for example, our organization will sometimes use things like poster boards or markers or other things that we need for meetings or for workshops and seminars that we have for women in public policy. So is that an option or is that not?
We've looked into similar things for restaurants and such and haven't had any luck at all. You know, Wegmans, what they actually have is a purchase order with them, the university does. So when I've asked for something like that before, I kind of got shot down. So I don't think that would be an option.
If you're buying something from a department on campus, so whether it's the Big Red Barn, you're renting a room, or you're going to use any of the Cornell dining facilities or catering, what else? So if you're buying anything from a department at Cornell, we can facilitate that for you. You don't have to. I think the other day I reimbursed somebody for renting a room in Lincoln Hall, and it's like I could have done that for them. They didn't have to spend money out of their pocket to rent a room on this campus. So, again, we have, what's the form that we have to use for that? The direct charge form. So those forms are all available out on WorkSafe. But, you know, so before you spend money at a department at Cornell, either reach out to me or look at this form that's online, and we can facilitate that for you. You don't have to spend money out of pocket for that.
So that means you can reserve it without a cost because it's your office doing it, or is it a cost and you're just...
So what will happen is this form will get filled out. I'll just sign off on it and let whoever that building coordinator is know that the account number, in a sense. Okay. So, yeah, you can reserve it with this form, right? Okay. So there's paper.
But that's still going to be cost to the club. They just don't have to pay up front.
They don't have to pay up front. And I've been trying to do a lot of this electronically so that people don't have to run around and find me in an office or whatever. But so... contact me if it's something, you know, here at Cornell that you're trying to buy.
And again, a year from now, we're going to have a new budget system, and all of these efficiencies that we've been trying, you know, thinking of, we're going to implement, and hopefully a year from now, things will be easier for everyone. So that's our goal.
Direct payments to vendors. Can you speak to that one? That is, I'd probably better than I can.
Yeah, if you have a vendor that you want to pay, you just, like Terry said with the other form, it's actually called the GPS AFC Direct Payment Authorization Form. So what you would do is fill it out and turn it in, and then it would come into our office, and we have somebody that has a super fee card, and they can actually call the vendor and pay the vendor on your behalf. You don't have to, you know, pay that money out of your pocket.
Yes.
So this is, I might have missed this. Let's say I got a budget allocation and I can spend this much, and I end up not spending the full amount of that budget allocation. Am I able to retroactively change those funds, or is it just forever I should spend the maximum amount?
So Beth, you answered that briefly, but could you repeat that maybe for
if you request a certain amount for an event and then you don't end up spending all of it, like in us allocating that amount of money to you, that's what we have accounted for in our accounts given to you. So if you don't spend that amount of money on that event as you had planned, then that would like count against you as far as like your geo allocation goes and like your record of spending goes.
If you're less specific and just say you're doing social events and have like this and just potential social events, can I give you a little more flexibility? So if you only spend $100 on this one, you spend more on the next one. But it doesn't have to be a specific event that you're spending $100
on. Like, do you prefer your description to be more specific because then we're more likely to fund the event if we know what you are planning to spend the money on? Then you can just say, like, $600 for all social events, and like that says nothing, you know what I'm saying? So I would say just like really being as intentional as possible, and even like when you are all like turning over your e-boards and that's for people, like sharing any receipts and sharing like how many people attend these events and like what the cost is per person so that you have like the most accurate record as possible.
I think what she's trying to say is, like, let's say we had two events that were each supposedly about 100, and the first one happens to be about 90, and do we care if we mentioned 100 times? And then we're getting first.
That should probably be fine.
Okay.
Can you repeat that? What was the answer? The two separate options last time?
Like, if there's two separate events and, like, nominally each one's going to be about 100 bucks, the first one happens to come in under, you can apply the remainder to that second.
That would probably be fine if you like reached out to us and like communicated that.
So in doubt, reach out to Beth.
Yeah.
Yes. Or Mary. Yes. I had Kavya. Caitlin, and Nate. But do you have questions about allocations, reimbursement?
I have questions about reimbursement.
Okay. So reimbursements.
I just want to make a quick comment. I've been a treasurer, I've been on the FC, and I've been like around before and then after the guidelines. And that like the details that the FC asked for is not like supposed to be a punishment. But I know like collecting all the paperwork stuff is like a hassle and it's like work. And to think about like, you know, your FC being in here to like say how much are these events going to cost. But the reason for all of that is for the people who spend a lot of time trying to be judicious about that and plan ahead and know how much they're going to spend, is that they get rewarded with that like good due diligence with lots of allocation money. And that, you know, if the groups who consistently kind of wing it and then spend, you know, $100 of their $1,000 allocation, that $900 doesn't like go to waste and roll over, and that it can be given to groups who are willing to like, you know, plan. So So it's not supposed to be a punishment in this kind of stuff. It's just supposed to encourage like people to plan ahead. That's all.
Okay. So did you want to wait until the end, or is this?
I had
quick follow-up.
Okay, yes, yes.
I think how you're informing them.
Okay.
Did you have it?
Okay, okay.
So as for direct payment to vendors, could you talk about what kind of vendors that would be or what kind of offsetting? Are there any restrictions?
I mean, anything that you have a budget for that can be paid with, you know, through our office is fine.
So catering, picking up supplies, ordering supplies for an event from like Amazon or Raiders or something.
Any of those things. We have one of my staff members, her name is Lorraine Geiger. After you probably know who she is. She is kind of like the student organization person, and she just works with students all day long with gift money and GPSAFC and SAFC and all kinds of different funding things, and she loves working with students. So I actually have some of her business cards if anybody has any specific need to talk to her in the next couple of weeks.
What's her email?
LAG19.
Thank you.
And she will kill me tomorrow. Now, Lorraine's great. She's always worked with students. She's been at the university for many years. She loves working with groups and helping.
Did you have more options?
No, not really. I mean, I think we'll take questions.
Yeah,
okay. I mean, the best.
Yeah. So I had Kavya.
So one question and two questions. The first one I think was brought up earlier, which is TAP reimbursable, and if not now, will it be with the new system you guys are considering?
So that was one of the first questions that came to me in the summer, was around tax. And so I looked into it, and if you end up paying tax, I am reimbursing you for, even if you're a university organization.
Right.
So the tricky thing about tax exemption is technically, in order to receive tax exemption on behalf of the university, you have to use a university purchasing method to get the tax exemption. So if anybody is paying out of pocket, officially that doesn't work. So that's why we've done that. And of course, if you're an independent organization, then you can't use the university purchasing methods and get their tax exemption. So that falls under that.
The second question was, I think, referring specifically to a scenario that Patrick said, where it's like your deadline is October 30th, your event is 2nd November, and they're not going to be looking at this event until maybe like the first week of November. How would a P-card system like handle events like that, where you're like, it's happening right now, you submitted the budget, but you're not sure if it's been approved? So,
right.
Yeah, probably wouldn't for that specific case. You know, hopefully those are few and far between, but it probably wouldn't fit. But, you know, that being said, if any group has a situation where they need someone else to pay for it, they have something that needs to be purchased, regardless of what it is, and they can't pay out of pocket, contact us. We'll help you out, you know, whether it's Lorraine paying with a P-card or us writing a check. You know, obviously there's paperwork to be submitted, and a lot of times you have to plan well enough to give it at least 3 weeks or so. But we're here to help you take care of that.
I guess following up on that, like, you have a lot of options that's like allow students to not pay out of pocket.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of planning is needed? Say they need a direct payment or, you know, a direct charge form. Like, how much time in advance do they need to do it to actually get it?
Well, when I do the training for people in our department, we always say 3 weeks. You know, it takes 3 weeks for someone to process a check to get to the vendor or whatever. So 3 weeks is definitely a good guideline to go by.
Okay. Yes.
How
does reimbursement work with a lot? If they, like, you can get something delivered and you know, $5 or $10, can you just break down how much you tip?
Yeah, for all reimbursements, detailed receipts are expected. So, you know, you can't just get the pizza box that just has the amount and the tip and the total. You have to have the detailed receipt behind it, but also you would include where you sign for the tip. And it also has to have, like, that it was paid on it. So sometimes people might get asked to actually submit, you know, a copy of their bank statement with everything else blacked out, but just something showing that they actually made that payment instead of just an invoice of how much something costs. But tips, we always, you know, take care of tips.
Yes.
What about that? Is there a cap on
what's the standard? What should we use the standard?
I think the university does have some numbers out there, some percentages, but, you know, we look at what's reasonable. You know, if you tip the pizza driver $50 on a $20 pizza, we're going to probably question.
I'll probably say something about that.
So 18, 20?
Yeah, that would be reasonable, yeah.
Any other last questions? Yes, I have you, and then I'll have the swing dance one.
Okay. You mentioned a few big steps for you guys to work things through. Is that only for the reinvestment or is that also for the e-card thing? Because if that's a few weeks to get the credit limit to the credit card, then doesn't that mean that we have another few weeks of
So when I said 3 weeks, the question was if we were going to be in the process of helping somebody avoid paying out of pocket, like if they wanted us to do something to make a payment, that's what the suggestion was. Give us 3 weeks so that we can, you know, make sure we get all the paperwork in and get all the signatures or whatever that's needed and give the check time to click, you know, be mailed or whatever. That's what I was talking about. It doesn't have anything to do with the P card.
Yes.
I don't know if you said anything about this before, but have you checked the status of our reimbursements? Like, if there's a problem, you guys tell us, or do you have to come to you and share?
Yeah. I reach out with questions when I have them. I mean, you certainly can reach out and ask me the status of where it's at. I know we're starting to get backed up a little bit.
Yeah, so obviously our office handles both the SAFC and the GPSAFC reimbursements. SAFC is quite a bit larger in numbers than the GPSAFC. But if Terry has a question and she's reviewing the paperwork originally, she'll reach out and ask if it has to do with the budget or something like that. If it gets to my office, the biggest holdup usually, and it's not for reimbursements necessarily, but the biggest holdup for payments through our office, we send the vendor an email to ask the vendor to set themselves up as a vendor in the courthouse system, and they never get back to us. But that's not reimbursements. Reimbursements can be made, you know, basically automatically, especially to students. But what you'll see is, at the end of each semester, we get hundreds of requests for payments and reimbursements all at once. Not from GPSAFC, but from the SAFC and the GPSAFC. So towards the end of the semesters is when it really gets backed up, because they, you know, will literally get two or three crates all turned in at once. And it takes a while for Terry and Terry to go through those and then get them to our office. And that's what I mentioned before, like, my staff handles most of them, but during those times, it's, you know, all hands on deck. Whoever has extra time helps with process those. So.
Where are you with the pre-approved vendors?
Pre-approved vendors like Cornell Purchasing, like Google Cornell Purchasing, they have the, I think they're authorized vendors possibly, yeah. But there is a list.
There is a list of preferred.
Preferred vendors, yeah.
Any other questions? Just a shout if I don't see you. Probably I'm not seeing anyone yet. Okay. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so next we have our division breakouts.
Motion to reduce the time for the division breakout open forum by 5 minutes each, considering we're running late.
Okay, any dissents? Seeing none, I will shorten our division breakout. So can you point to where people are supposed to go?
So humanities on this side, physical science on the outside,
I mean, like, say,
I don't know.
but many
Thank you. I don't know. If we do have a
Okay, so we have committee updates. Okay, so let's do quickly committee updates. It should be in here, and if you have any questions for committee chairs, or if any committee chairs present would like to highlight something they didn't get to write, this is your chance. Andy?
So for the next meeting, is our last meeting, we do have a full agenda, so I will not be requesting additional items. A couple of those things on the agenda is Mary Opperman is going to be coming and talk to us about policy 6.4,
which is
that's about bias and
sexual
conduct and things related to that nature. And she will be coming to talk to us about that, and also the university mission statement. They're trying to gauge interest on in how to form that. And also, Dean Youth will be talking to us about assistantships, fellowships, and additional funding, which is what this division breakout is going to be. So I am going to warn you guys that it will maybe run a little bit longer than it should. And also, you should have all received a survey asking you to fill out mental health.
Yeah, mental health service.
So be sure to do that and tell your friends to do that as well.
Yeah.
That's going to be really helpful.
Yes.
So what I want to share that is that this is really nice to me, and I can share.
All students should have gotten it in their emails. It was sent to all students, so you don't need to share it. You just need to tell people to do it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Share the news.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, we'll have the results at that meeting too.
Yes. So the lab report.
Yeah.
It's really short. It's really short.
Anything else for committee updates? Eugene?
So this is hosting an event with Dean Newton tomorrow, What's Your Story, where students are allowed to share their stories with Dean Newton. We've had very few registrants for that event, so people have plenty of time to talk. And if you register within the next hour or so, I'll even send you the guidelines for what to expect for the story, because I haven't sent it out statistics yet. So feel free to register and come. Read it at 4:30, 6:30. 701 Clark Hall. Y'all should have gotten an email about it last week and forwarded that to all of your constituents. Hopefully people got it, but maybe nobody wants to talk to me. I don't really understand.
Okay.
Well, let's extend the meeting by 5 minutes. And
then we're also...
Can we extend the meeting by 5 minutes? No dissent? Okay. Eugene, yes?
We're also hosting another community conversation on the 26th. It's going to be another Let's Talk About TA sort of event. That'll be from 12:30 to 1:30 on the 26th in Flex Science 336. And then I think there's one more event in December that I'm forgetting. But we'll get more updates after Thanksgiving about anything that's happening in December.
So you can send details to Alexa, because she sends a summary of the meeting with important dates right after every meeting. So that's another good way to get the word out.
Can you also post on the UTSA events Slack?
Yeah.
Like a reasonable thing to do is remind the UTSA to evaluate the thing that you should help people out.
So email is not the preferred mode of contacting.
I think it's a good first try. Let's put it that way, and there are other ways to do it that will boost that. But I've been seeing the event on Facebook too. Anything else, Eugene?
No
questions. Any questions for Eugene?
Email me, EPL49. Is it also in the grad student newsletter from last week and the one that should be going out tonight? So that's another way to find the information and the link to register.
Yeah, look out for the grad announcements.
Yeah.
Any other updates? Questions? Okay. Seeing none. Okay. Is there any dissent to adjourning without doing open forum? Is there any dissent? Okay, seeing none. We're adjourned.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.